Well, hello and welcome to Mike's iLab podcast, episode 130, for the 23rd of June, 2017. Well, I hope hello and welcome to a cooler Friday. It's been very hot this week, indeed, and so I put off the podcast partly because I had activities tomorrow. I mean, I had activities yesterday during the day and wanted to get those out the way before the Game Changer event that went to in the evening with the launch of the 50 Game Changer directory from Connect TVT, which features Thingitude and had mentions during the year about RLab itself. So if you can pick up a copy, if you're in Grow, then you'll be seeing them round and about. Lots of local businesses and contacts in lots of tech around the Thames Valley, and the event was at the Thames Tower up on what's the sort of roof garden as part of it. Is what you can't see from below is actually open to the air, and makes a great venue for such launches. And on Wednesday I was at the PHP dev meetup, which is at Austin Fraser's offices, which are on the 11th floor of the Thames Tower. Great views all around. They've moved from Forbury Gardens, or Forbury Square, where they were, and consolidated two of their offices into one floor. So that's it's a great office for them. I should post some pictures up of their little mini golf course and things they've got inside. It looks like a great place to be working. And hoping to persuade them to be a host for Things Network, as it would give us a great coverage. I'll post some pictures up of that as well over at TTNUG group, the forum group. And last Sunday was the Repair Cafe. I wasn't able to make it myself. I had to go and visit somebody in hospital. What else was going on? Well, yeah, with the heat, we've had Ascot. So if anyone's been driving around Ascot, they'll have noticed the increase in traffic. Certainly been busier and more disruptive on the trains into Reading. Temperature recorded on the Merle dashboard have got up to 42 degrees was the highest. But of course that is in the sun there, although the actual temperature sensor is shaded and in free air. But the heat pump at the space has been doing a great job, really chilling down the main room and even taking coolness and heat out of the chill room and the laser area. So very effective at not only just doing the main room. So that's still working very well, which is great, and really came into its own this year. Next week we'll have the Thames Valley IoT meetup, and I think most of the other news is covered in the groups, so let's dive straight in. Faye had a couple of more suggestions for a replacement phone. Not sure which way she's gone yet. And she lost, I think, a couple of other items when she lost the phone. So people were asking about whether it had been recovered. And so that was unfortunate. But as the had her door cards in there and was looking for that. But the door cards don't have any identity on them about our lab. They just look like a blank card. Obviously not quite the same for debit cards, unfortunately. Although it's still curious how these things get used when you meant to have a PIN number. Ho-hum. And as part of the rejig and mention here about the wood on the eBay shelves, well, the shelves in that area are going to be moved to give Faye better access into the workshop with a ramp from the door if that plan comes together. So it's part of the reason she was in the space doing some testing about getting round at the angles. Also be some work going on the front door itself. So I think the wood will be having to find a new home. The other shelves are generally pretty clear, as the 3-week shelf idea didn't really work out for those new members who don't know the history of it. The original idea was that the 3-week shelves, as they were known, would be stuff coming in on 1 week and being made available for people to make use of on their projects or claim via the group for the second week. And if they were still there after the 3 weeks, they would then be disposed of. But it started to become a bit of a dumping area for stuff that nobody really had a use for, and just became a burden to keep taking to the tip and recycling. So that was changed into what became Lost and Found Shelves, where people could use it as a sort of mail drop for moving things from one member to another member for collection. Also, if things were found in the space left over accidentally, or for people's projects that weren't marked, they could be put there and left. And certainly doesn't need the amount of space that it's currently taking up. And by moving the shelves, the door will be able to open more widely, giving good wheelchair, or at least available wheelchair access, which is needed. And we mentioned a missing meter. Well, Pav was offering a desktop DMM to be on loan, and he said it was it's an expensive one, and he don't want to make sure that it was recoverable. I did notice there were another digital DMM up there. I don't know if that is the one. I have to check. Obviously, if it's on loan, it should be marked up accordingly, I think. Check out that one. It is a desktop-type DMM. Not quite as handy as the handheld ones, really. But possibly not more accurate, but with a bigger display. And on that note, Tony posted pictures of a lockable cash box for the laser cutter that he created using the laser cutter. And yeah, it's a sort of double box design with a drawer that slides out from the inside. And people were certainly impressed with the design and the look of the thing. If you haven't seen it, you can either find it on the Twitter account at RDGHACK, Red Hack, or by going into the laser cutter room. And on the group, there were some posts about suggestions for perhaps improving security as well. I might want to check those out in that thread if you want to get involved. And Pav was asking what happened to about the flight case. I assume it went to one of the people who were interested in taking it and using it. So, nice to have an update on that one. And Toby talks about a new technique for sharpening the wood lathe tools using the small belt sander. He said, based on a YouTube recommendation, I've had some very good success sharpening the lathe tools on the small belt sander. Using the slack of the belt makes it much more forgiving and reduces heat buildup a lot. To this end, I've purchased some high grit grinding belts, and for tool grinding, they will be be useless and wrecked by wood sanding. So please don't use them to do belts. Well, hopefully they can be marked up so that people know which ones are which. Maybe some colouring or something on there. Although what Toby says is that he plans to just install them temporarily in the time for doing the sharpening. Richard suggests it might be, given the price of the belt sanders, justified to have a dedicated one for the high grit tool sharpening, given how much woodwork is going on in the space now as well. So if you're into doing work on the lathe and haven't heard about the tool sharpening rather than using the grinder, then check out the thread marked tool sharpening and the small belt sander. And Lauren's updates with the monies that he's paid in for aluminium and laser accounted, but asks a question about Boxford spindle time. I think given that they've still not a production tool and there's a lot of effort going into improving it, I think that's probably not the case at the moment, but hasn't been an answer on that question yet. And Lawrence alerts us to Aldi often having special offers. In this case, it's an offer about some router bits, £10 or £9.99. Look, a very posh case for them. We're not sure about the quality of the actual bits themselves. I've used something similar, and they from Lidl's a long time ago. They turned out to be pretty good bits generally, but probably not up to the use that we make of them at the Hackspace. And it's what about a dozen bits. But they're not necessarily the most useful shapes and things. So I can think there are quite a few bits in the space, but thanks to Lawrence for updating. It's always handy if you see one of these offers, as they're quite short-lived, and they can be a useful bargain well, I think we had some solar panels alerted in the past. But also at Glass Olsen, they have these flash sales. So always worth posting up about them and learning about such experiences. Luke posts up, I went to Berkshire Metals this morning. They were helpful and reasonably priced for what I wanted. So thanks for the heads up. How good to hear that that we've got friendly local steel suppliers. And Lawrence also asks about using RGWorks V8. And there's been lots of discussions previously about use of V8, experimented with it, and it didn't seem to work properly. I can't remember exactly what the problem was. Something to do with the serial interface, was it? But he's asking because he says that I'm writing a tool that outputs DXF, and RGWorks seem to crap out with any version of DXF higher than R15. DXF 2007 has some advantages. It would be nice to take advantage of 2007, so it's 10 years old already. Yeah, so no, I know it is fussy about the versions. I don't know exactly what the details are. I've never looked into it, but Ben comes back with a fairly straightforward no, although it might be worth expanding upon that. If you do a search on RGWorks V8 on the group, I'm sure we'll come up with some. So make a note to self about replying to Lawrence. And Gavin asks a question that a lot of people will have or have had or will have if they have the opportunity to own their own home. A plumber recommendation. Anyone know of a good cheap plumber? Having just made my fourth attempt at trying to do some joins on pipes leading to a radiator only to see them drip again, I'm getting to the point where I'm going to admit defeat. Well, so quite a few questions come in. And Eric makes some suggestions as to what type of joint mechanisms and bits and pieces are being used and the preparation and considerations that need to be made when doing it. Some useful tips in the thread. And Tom says about if there's too many joints, which it seems in this case there's a lot of angles involved, it may be worth redoing them. No mention of the soldering ones. And one of the useful things I found was, that I haven't used it myself, were soldering, big clamps, basically, like a soldering iron, but clamps around, electric, around the solder type connections. But when you're trying to retro-do it, then draining down the system seems to be essential, as any residual water in the system just creates steam, which cools down the joints and prevents soldering working at all. So, and finally, in the last post there, Jeremy suggests the name and phone number of a plumber. It looks as though he may be able to recommend them. But I know plumbers are difficult to come by. There's also the local heroes thing they keep advertising, sponsored by British Gas, I think, is the contractors they use in areas, they're making them available for people to just look up in a directory and take employment themselves. And what else? Oh yeah, the depends on the job. A neighbour of ours had been waiting weeks, and several plumbers come to look at doing a shower job, but most of them just say it takes too much time and money, and that even though if it's prepared to spend the money, they don't really want to spend the time doing the work on these sort of plumbing jobs. So taps and things are straightforward, and radiator should be straightforward, but showers seem to be particularly a challenging thing, possibly due to all the elements of tiling and other possible problems that are not really within the plumber's remit. So hopefully Gavin gets that sorted one way or the other without too much hair loss. And Ian puts out a call for a catalogue group. Now I thought immediately of people getting together to buy things out of a Littlewoods catalogue. That was the thing of the past. This is really to do with cataloguing and recording in a way that is accessible, all the tools and I guess resources in the space. So there's been 4 volunteers, 5 volunteers, 6 volunteers so far, and some others and some suggestions about how it might go ahead. So I should put my name down to give a hand as much as I can on that side. And given we've got over 100 members, then we should have at least a decent amount of people volunteering more than we have here currently. So I think partly but then of course it depends there may be a core group who want to pass out sort of jobs to others, it might be a better way of doing it rather than everyone just diving in. But if you want to sign up to help catalogue tools and resources in the space, check out the catalogue group thread. And Gavin posts to a news article. Marks and Spencer say labelling avocados with lasers is more sustainable. So is paring back its fruit and vegetable labelling to be more environmentally friendly, replacing stickers with laser markings. From Thursday, M&S will sell avocados bearing what look like pale tattoos, showing the best before date and origin. Peeling away the traditional labelling will save 10 tonnes of paper and 5 tonnes of glue a year. More of its fruit and vegetables may be laser branded in the future, the retailer says. But they'd say the laser takes off one layer of skin, and instead of inking it or burning it, the skin retracts and leaves a mark. Well, I do think it burns it, because that's the way it works, basically. I think when they mean burn, they don't mean scarring burns. And they're also putting on a short code, a three-letter identity, which apparently allows you to put it through at the till. Previous experiments with citrus fruits proved disappointing, since the laser penetrated too far into the soft fruit porous skin and made the fruit deteriorate faster. And a bit of history, the avocado was first introduced into UK stores in 1968 as the avocado pear, and some customers consumed it as a dessert with custard. These days it's more likely to be served smashed up on toast as guacamole or as a smoothie. And sales in their stores increased 29% last year. So that came from a BBC World Service programme, Science in Action, and on their BBC News website. But I bring that to you so you don't have to follow the link yourself. And I mentioned Eric's request for speakers for on IoT for Basic Stoke Hackspace or Bad Hack. And Mark's volunteered to do the talk on the Things Network as a somewhat better speaker than me. But if anyone else has a subject that they can enlighten the techies of Basingstoke about, then I'm sure Eric would be pleased to add you to a schedule sometime in the future. So it's not an immediate need. They're just looking to schedule speakers for the next few months until they get their permanent space, but even then, I guess. And a call for diary dates and people interested. 2nd of July, the annual Reading Buses Family Open Day, which is in just around the corner in Great Knowledge Street. I went last year and it was very good and very busy. A great long queue, even just after opening time to get in. It was a lovely day then, and lots of activities going on, lots of stands are set up, and they've offered the opportunity for an R-Lab stand. So if anyone would like to help man an R-Lab stand, then that would be good. Also, get a chance to look around the workshop and probably look at Alice's giant 3D printer that he's been building. Yes, he says, yeah, I'll be providing a 3D printer or two, regardless, I'll be there myself. But at this stage, I can't confirm I can cover the stand all day. So he's looking for others at R-Lab to help out. And people may, I've mentioned it, but it's worth mentioning again that they've got a tech lab area. Not sure exactly the status. It was a couple of months ago, it was just being kitted out. And it's not where Alex's printer is. It's down in the main workshop. So that'd be interesting to find out more about what they're doing there. What they were doing is offering a six-month sort of internship to people who are interested in helping out with Reading Buses, and have all the facilities there to be able to work on a project to improve any feature of Reading Buses service with full access to all of their resources. Nigel comes back. Something we were looking at actually for Christmas, the big flame flower thing, similar to what you see at stadiums where they have a number of them shooting flames up into the air. Apparently it runs off naphtha, which is quite a difficult thing to get hold of in aerosol form. Not too surprising, perhaps, but wondering if there might be a bio version of it, but then may not be the best example of green energy, says Richard. No other offers to help man a stand, and it's not too far away, so we'll have to see if people are interested. If we can get a quorum of people to man the stand, then it's just around the corner. Should be hopefully easy to arrange if people are going to be available on the 2nd of July, which is a Sunday. So make a note of that, and if you are able to help out or interested in helping out, then I'll post up on the Invitation to Reading Buses thread. Jeremy says, the topic has come up a number of times, but here is a nice overview of the steps needed to select a solar system for powering an embedded device. Points to a YouTube video about solar power for ESP, Arduino, etc. So there's about 15 minutes of video here talking about the different devices and the different panels about power requirements and other bits and pieces that you may need to do. So a bit interesting one. I shall have a look at that and post back next week. And in Oliver points us to an announcement in the Register about Intel killing off the Joule, Edison and Galileo boards. It's a bit, they're a bit like the BeagleBone. I think they were too expensive to compete with things like the Raspberry Pi and Arduino, and not really powerful enough to do something extra for the price. Personally, there were a lot of, you had to have a lot, and because people hadn't really taken them up, there weren't a lot of example code. You often needed a special breakout board to add some functions that were standard with the Arduino, or very easily or cheaply added. And I think it's what Ben agrees, really. It's not really surprising. So yes, I think it means that things will start consolidating. But I did hear that the microbit's going to be sold in America, so that might boost the support on the microbit side of things. If they took it up, if they take it up in a similar way to that they've taken up the Raspberry Pi, although people have their doubts, and I probably agree with them too, whether that be. But Arduino are doing various new things as well, and the only question there is, they've got so many different varieties. Are they going to consolidate down to a lower one? Or I'm sure a number of their varieties will drop off the supported list quite quickly. Anyway, you can check out the article in the Register about that one from the link. Okay, so it was the Tuesday hardware evening. Not much seemed to be going on that thread, but seems that most of the focus was on working with the Boxford and the potential for replacing the controller. Quite a lot of discussion from Richard, Toby and Lawrence, looking at the various options and getting parts information about the stepper drivers, which are big chunky things with pretty hefty heat sinks on them, and they're apparently running at 12 volts. And so looks as though things are moving forward on the mill. Potentially changing or supplementing the control system, or changing it so that it's providing some of the functionality that seems to be a bit erratic and causing mechanical problems when milling at the moment. So some great minds looking at that project on a regular basis and moving forward. And there was also some plasma cutter activity going on. And you'll see, if you look at the RDG Hack website or Twitter, some pictures of what they achieved using a template. It was Tony's suggestion to laser cut a template and then using the platter cutter. I was surprised at how smaller beam or smaller cutting area, about 4 mil or something, that the plasma cut has. I had in my mind something much fiercer. It looks pretty fierce when it's being used with the sparks. And there was information posted because the main door was going to be open, not to be parking cars directly outside the door due to the spark activity. So I guess it was quite spectacular. I'm not sure anyone's posted any pictures of it, but they did post the picture of the result, which was about a foot across our lab logo, quite neatly cut and quite funky looking. Oh yes, and the photos also posted here in the thread. And then Andy asks about stainless. He said he tried to do it with the Hackspace machine. It didn't go so well, but looking for an explanation as to why. So Rupert says, an explanation. Plasma cutting burns up the metal being cut and releases it into the air as dust. Stainless contains both chromium and nickel, the oxides of which are seriously unpleasant. You don't want to be breathing them in. As our lab doesn't yet have the proper protective gear for dealing with that, we might look at getting that some if there's demand. So thanks for Rupert for running that. That was actually Monday night, and it seems that Andy didn't really even get started with it due to a problem. So yeah, he fortunately didn't come across that problem. But then there was also a note about people attending not wearing flammable materials such as plastics and nylons. So Levi's or something flame-proof, even if you were going to be standing anywhere close by. But also there was a point about people not necessarily, or reading through the list and turning up, but not alerting anyone to the fact that they will. So Rupert says, thanks for coming. Having only one except on the list, we were quite surprised at the numbers, with a smiley. Hope everyone had a good time. So it looks as though that was successful, and there'll be further laser cutter training sessions and inductions once some safety equipment has been purchased to make the job safe for the person doing it, at least. There's a lot of people are using this equipment elsewhere, so they have their own PPE rather than needing it to be supplied by the space. And Andrew posts up about, could members stop using Go Cardless? It was a system, I don't use it myself, but apparently it was one that had great hopes that it would integrate with the accounts system. But it turns out that when they pay things into the bank, there was no reference code to identify the payer, and that makes it difficult to reconcile the accounts. So Andrew's asking if people can move over to a standing order and put in a suitable reference registered so that the accounts or the HSBC statements indicate where the payment came from, so it can be reconciled. Jeremy just asked for clarification on that, which hasn't been replied to yet, but it looks as though he says I just have to cancel the Go Cardless direct debit via my bank. Or is there another preferred option? Okay, so a further update from a previous thread that I mentioned about a desktop, a DMM digital multimeter Fluke that Pav was offering. He says, yes, I brought it in. So it is the one that was there. That makes sense. He says, can it be marked PAC on loan to our lab? But the next one is not PAC, but PAV. PAV, he said, autocorrect messing around with my name again. And it is, yeah, the older damn autocorrect. But Tony also says that people should note that there is no insurance for contents for the space. So if people are leaving gadgets, it's something they have to consider for their own risk. But he comes back and says, it's a bit of overkill for my own use, and I want to get myself a quality mobile one, so consider donating it to our lab. So that's generous of Pav, and we thank him for that. Now, the third Monday of the month, sort of designated as being the TV RepRap user group meetup, TV Rug, and what we've tended to do is, as things have got quieter between some major projects, when there's not been a lot of activity, is if people want some clinic, then they post up over on the TV RepRap user group forum, and we arrange for somebody to be there deliberately dealing with that. It seems that people have got about the message about it being a regular TV Rug night, but don't necessarily post to say that they're going to be coming along. And it seems that somebody turned up on Monday after I'd left and was interested, and he got a tour around. We don't have a name for him yet. He said he didn't leave any details, but was going to contact via the website. So hopefully over on the group, perhaps we'll post up on the website. But I think also it pops up on some of the calendars as a designated night. Maybe we just need to put a rider on it to say if you're making a special effort to come along, then let us know. And Stuart makes an offer of some A1 size foam paper signboards. He says, I'm not sure if they can be used with a laser cutter, but if they would, they could be ideal for test cuts. Just checking before I throw them out, he says. And Tony says, foam board doesn't cut well, at all well. He says, also, we need to know what the actual material is. I suppose Tony isn't familiar with the different material types that are used, as I'm sure there must be some common ones, but I guess if they're polystyrene and we have this chlorine problem or chloride problem, then it wouldn't be ideal. But maybe if others are interested, although no one's posted back, A-size foam signboards. Don't know, Stuart doesn't say whether they're printed on or whether they're plain, or post a picture, but it could be a useful base for another sort of sign. A1 is a good size. So thanks, Stuart, for posting that. If you haven't seen it, it was only posted a day ago. I'm sure be looking. If you're interested, follow that up under foam paper signboards. And Ian announces a call for input on rewiring, saying we're planning a total rewire. He lists the aims, 11 points, and asks for suggestions to be posted in the thread, looking for volunteers to draw up the spec, and then once that is done, looking for volunteers to help do the installation work. It's going to be a major project involving power, Ethernet, and all the elements. Scott, our pet electrician, as it were, has offered to help. Ian is suggesting that he should be recompensed accordingly. So if you have comments, wish to volunteer, have knowledge or particular requests for sockets or other services in a particular place, this is a great time to put out your request or put in your request. And also then be aware that it's going to be pretty disruptive to activities over, I would imagine, a number of days. So as a minimum, could be quite a number of days, given it, depending on how it's sort of broken down into a schedule. Won't, I'm sure, stop total hacking to be going on, but certainly can be disruptive. So post your thoughts up there in the call for input rewiring. And another subject that I'm sure members would be interested and have some opinions and like to submit their thoughts are under the thread about bike kitchen meetings. So Lou Stark, he says, you may or may not have met me before. My name is Lucille. I'm one of the directors of Reading Bike Kitchen. We're currently looking for a space to hold meetings where we can utilise space for tinkering on our bikes at the same time. At the moment, we're having our meetings at the Global Cafe, known as Risk. Well, I added known as Risk, which is great, but no one can work on their bikes and enjoy tinkering time as we used to in our weekly volunteer get-togethers. That's when they were at Jackson's Corner. So Andy, who is also a member at the Bike Kitchen and at our lab, mentioned the Hackspace might be a good venue. So we put forward a proposal about a regular weekly meeting, if it's possible. And Andy has come and clarified something about how he sees it would work. Richard and Mark, Arthur, support the goal of helping both the community side of the Bike Kitchen, as well as a fellow group, as well as just being generally good people until they find their own space. But there seem to be some practical difficulties with maybe having the 12 people and having meetings. So Tony raises some points and makes some suggestions that it could be the tinkering part rather than the meeting part. I also thought that maybe Reading Buses might have an area that they could host, and that's a good thought. I hadn't thought of that. Another one, equally I wouldn't have thought of, is the Castle Tap. Now, that's a pub at the castle. They also have a brewery, but Keegan says they have quite a bit of space to store stools and plenty of room to work. So that's an interesting suggestion. I've never been there, and that's not very far away, but maybe an opportunity for them. So I guess the next stage will be for Lucille, Andy, and maybe others getting together and thrashing out something that at least an opportunity to test things out. Doesn't need to be a fixed arrangement, but obviously when setting expectations, they need to be set accordingly. So if you've got any thoughts and comments on that, put them there in the thread. So it's been a busy week in the Google group, busiest that we've had for quite a number of weeks. Everyone's back and hacking. So I'm down to the last page of posts for this week, and already up over the half hour. So follow me through. I think we've got a couple of the hot topics of the quarter and hot topics of the week included here too. And in a title of a thread under title Quick Q, I guess question, Alex asks something that's anything but a quick, well, the question may be quick, but the answers certainly aren't. He's saying he's got gigabytes of iPhone voice memos clogging up his iPhone 5. I have a PC, but I don't want to install iTunes. Any way to download them other than emailing them one by one? I want to preserve obscure metadata in the title, such as the title and the date and time. And he said he's tried it before, basically, and he's lost the information as the file is stamped. Stuart points to a Stack Exchange article about retrieving voice memos from a device, indicating there's a particular options that are there. But I think the problem, from my perspective, is that if you're in the Apple ecosystem, they want you to stay in the Apple system. Plus, iTunes has lots of different versions, and each version changes things, in my experience, not for the better. I guess you might be able to use somebody else's Mac, although that's not a suggestion. I guess you have to link the account. I'm not sure. I don't have an iPhone. And I think, knowing Alex's preferences for open source stuff, I think he's keen to move away. But also, he by nature tends to enjoy preserving stuff and curating stuff, a bit like myself. And Tony, who does use Macs and Windows, points to macroplant.com, an explorer, Megafile Explorer. And there's also some other suggestions. So if you've got experience of using an iPhone 5 without having iTunes installed, well, I'm just wondering whether he could install it in a virtual machine and then blow it away later. I might make that suggestion on the thread, so note to self. And Keegan starts a new topic I don't think we've covered before. Power Wheel Racing Series, UK Power Wheel Racing Series is the title. He says, I've long been a fan of the Power Racing Series in the US, and having seen them race firsthand, I now need some of that in my life, he says. To that end, I'm trying to kick off a partner series to the US with their blessing. So he says, I've created a Facebook group, which unfortunately you have to be in Facebook to join it. So I shall make that comment as it either should be publicly available or have an alternative place to join in if he really wants a widest audience. As I'm not a Facebook user myself, and I know there's others who don't want to do that just to take part in something like this, but would perhaps be interested in taking part in it. And what is it? Well, he puts a link into poweracingseries.org. Basically, what it says is build and race an autonomous car, and can be driver or driverless, apparently. And there's some videos and talks about the schedule. These look, try to look at the size. Very small sort of sized, I think, depending on the size of the driver. So if you're interested in getting involved in that, Andy certainly seemed to be interested, then follow up. If you're a Facebook person, no problem. Otherwise, I shall make that comment, and hopefully he'll make an alternative place to mirror some of the information on the Facebook, or make the Facebook group publicly available for that side of it, which can be done, I think. And certainly we could add a special interest group in power racing or power wheels to the wiki. Note to self. And Richard reminds us that it was scheduled for the death of the vending machine next week, the suggestion being Wednesday. Not sure whether Alex has found a home, as he had suggested there was a potential arts use for it. I don't know if that's come about yet. Last post on that were April the 11th, so I think it concludes what we've said. I've sadly reluctantly agreed, well, not agreed, but reconciled myself that it's not going to be a practical project, so stopped doing any extra work on it myself. And so as a team, hopefully it will go to a place where someone else makes use of it, or alternatively it will just be destroyed. So any news? We haven't heard any official lines on that yet. And more news about Boxford work. And so Toby said there's been lots of threads about Boxford. However, none really seem to be the right place. So he started Boxford Improvement Thread, where he updates us on what I discussed earlier in the podcast. He says, last night, Rich and I spent a couple of hours untangling literally and metaphorically the wiring of the Boxford. Next Tuesday, we're going to try and drive one of the axes around using a spare smoothie board. Richard said he's added a section to the wiki under Boxford underscore 260 underscore VMC. Then some discussion about the thinking and reasoning behind starting making those changes. So if you've got an interest in the mill, want to learn more about what's going on, some great work there, a great example project that will probably be of value to lots of other people who have got similar Boxfords and having similar problems. So want to follow that thread, then Wiki looks as a good place to stick with the facts and the group for opinions. I said about the popular thread of the quarter or maybe the year, and it was discussing about networked attached storage. Alexander notes that a successfully crowdfunded campaign to create something called Personal Cloud One under Crowd Supply. Still time to make a pledge, he says. So if it's something you're interested in, that could be good news. But Ben notes that it only does mirrored, no parity, no EEC RAM. And questions about the enclosure and whether it could be sold as an item in the EU without CE marking, which Ryan questions as well. And certainly that's something that the Things Network are doing with their Kickstarter supply item, but then that's planned to be something to be sold later as well. But it is certainly taking a bit of time to do CE marking and radio approval, although it's meant to have been simpler with something called RED, which is a consolidation of different radio standards, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, LoRaWAN radios, etc., into a single approval mechanism. It doesn't seem to lighten the burden in terms of the work that's had to be done, but in theory it should do. But as a NAS, Alexander says that it's designed to work with SSDs, and so rather than hard drives, and so that's altered and perhaps simplified some of the mechanical requirements for it. If you're interested in a NAS, then you can find the link there. It's a thread that's been going on some time, and it's quite a valuable thread, really. It has 90 posts with different comments about different ways of providing your own backup services at home. So down to our last three posts. And Keegan asks for some help looking at doing some work on his e-bike, because he said, and I mentioned, I think last week or a week before, about a kit he'd bought to add to his standard bike, which comes, I think, from Germany, and allows you to add an extra crank to drive the chain. He says, I've recently upgraded my bike to a mid-crank motor to make it an e-bike and learned that the display unit and motor controller communicate via serial. I'd like to put something in line with this so I can make my own display for it. I was thinking of using an Arduino. Has anyone done something similar for monitoring a serial communication? Well, it depends on really what type of serial comms, really. There's lots of different forms and protocols, some of which are proprietary, some of which are standard. And Ben suggests the Bus Pirate as an option. And a second Ben 3, really, Ben S, who says you should be able to piggyback it on the same serial interface and watch the comms. But I think this is something that Keegan isn't familiar with, so maybe we should give him some pointers to some ways of doing breakouts with this. I've got some old gear from the RS-232 days, but it depends on the nature of the tool. So part of what it is, we need to find out what the make is. And I can't remember if you mentioned it before, so I shall make a note to self. So down to the last post. Vance updating about potential security improvements. So he makes five with extra points in between and asks for comment and information on them. Discussion about marking stuff, how to pay, a picture of the box that I mentioned previously for a more secure, plus suggestions about different ways that people could pay into the bank account and keep a log of what they intend to help them reconcile their own account, as it were. And then news about some new CCTV equipment that's arrived. Personally, I'm not entirely sure that this will prevent things, but I shall put my own comments forward on that. And if you've got any, either post them up here or post them to the directors. I'm sure there's going to be some meeting, and then one thing that James asks about, what kind of approval process is anticipated to get buy-in of the membership. So on that fairly serious note, we shall finish the podcast, just tucking around 45 minutes. Longer one this week, as I said. Looks as though everyone's back hacking. Now a bit of cooler weather, be more comfortable for those hot activities. So, but comfortable enough, hopefully, for enjoying barbecues, enjoying Ascot, enjoying Wimbledon, and things going on in Henley this weekend as well. So lots of activities going on around. And Goring, yes, there's a music event raising money remembering George Michael in Goring. So it looks as though summer's really started. Glastonbury's going on, and lots of activity all around the hat. This is Mike Debbie, signing off.